The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
Hello and welcome into our Friday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Oh, is it cold? By next week, it will be much better. They say it is going to get up into the area above freezing as of Sunday. So relief is on the way. I saw this morning on one of the shows that this is like the 11th longest stretch of days without getting above freezing. And the longest stretch goes back to 1978, one of those two brutal winters that we had while I was in high school. So enough about the weather. We're going to talk about the Wildcats, as we always do. Here on the Leach Report, and we'll do that today with Chris Dortch from the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook and with Mike DeCourcy from SportingNews.com. Kentucky has a big game coming up tomorrow, so we'll talk about that and more with those guys. You can always interact with us via Twitter at Leach Report, email LeachReport@gmail.com, or you can give us a call at 877-904-1080, toll-free anywhere in Kentucky. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. There's a Herald Leader story that Ben Roberts did, survey of national recruiting analysts, and a majority think Zion Williamson is going to pick Clemson. He is going to apparently make his decision before too long, and for a long time, a lot of folks thought it was Kentucky, but Clemson has close the gap, apparently, so we'll see how it plays out. But for now, the prevailing opinion, anyway, is that he is going to go to Clemson. Kentucky is at Tennessee tomorrow, and this will be a very, very difficult game, but that's no shock to you, I would assume, because Kentucky has lost three of the last four in Knoxville, so it's always been a tough place for Kentucky to play. Kentucky faces a Tennessee team that will be, I would think, in desperation mode since the Vols are coming off back-to-back losses. The one at Arkansas last Saturday, not a bad loss. They nearly had a tremendous win. Anybody that goes into Arkansas and win, that's going to be a great road win. But they let it slip away, lost in overtime, and then they came home and lost to Auburn. Now, the Auburn game kind of looks like Kentucky's UCLA game in that it looks like an outlier versus the rest of their season. For whatever reason, they had a bad day against Auburn. They gave up 94 points. They had not given up above 80. They had not given 80 or more to anybody all season. Auburn was down for much of the game and then just steamrolled Tennessee late. This is a Tennessee team that is really good in with its interior defense, and Kentucky gets the bulk of its points inside the arc. Tennessee does put opponents on the foul line a lot, so it will be important that Kentucky continue to do what it did in the second half of the LSU game and get inside and attack and get to the free throw line. They didn't shoot a free throw the first half of the LSU game. They did get there, I think, seven times in the second half, but they got a lot more baskets in the paint. They were in a negative position in the points in the paint in the first half against LSU. They were positive in the second half. And that's a stat that Kentucky will need to, if not win, then be very competitive in against Tennessee to get out of there with a victory. And that would be a huge one to get. Because if you look at the start of conference play, Tennessee had only lost to North Carolina and Villanova. So you figured that was going to be a good team, that ranked team, it was going to be a tough one to get on the road. So any of those, the first goal is to not lose the ones that you think you have a better shot to get, like at LSU. And Kentucky checked that box on Wednesday night. Next order of business is to steal some of the ones that on paper you would put as certainly potential losses. Places like Florida, Texas A&M, Tennessee. So if you can steal one of those, it would be huge. Women's basketball, Kentucky lost at Texas A&M last night, This is the 19th ranked team in the country, A&M, 74-70. So a much better performance for Kentucky. It's seven losses in a row. It's the longest skid in 16 years, according to the Herald Leader. But 70 points is noteworthy because Kentucky has been having great difficulty scoring and putting the ball in the basket. So this, to me, I didn't see the game, but just seeing that number, it's a step forward in terms of getting out of this hole that they've dug for themselves. Tonight is Excite Night for UK Gymnastics, and that's always a fun evening. And so if you are looking for something fun to get out and do tonight, Excite Night for UK Gymnastics. Links to the stories that we talk about each day can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. When we come back, Chris Dortch will join us from the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. It is the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up each and every day by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
So you're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
After the top of the hour on this Friday edition of the Leach Report, we're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Chris Dortch joins us from the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. You going to be in Knoxville tomorrow night?
Yes, sir.
Figured you would be. This should be a good one because I was just saying in the opening segment, the Tennessee's game Tuesday night against Auburn is a little bit, to me, like Kentucky's game against UCLA. It's just one that you look at their season, and it seems out of place. You know, they gave up 94 points, and they lose at home to an Auburn team that they're, I think, better than. So I would think Tennessee will be in all-out desperation mode, and Rick Barnes will have their full attention this week.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question, Tom. Really, that game had its origins on Saturday. They had Arkansas beaten down there. It was a sellout. The place was going crazy. They led by seven with 4 minutes to go. And I forget the exact sequence of events, but James Daniel, the guy that you would least expect to, a graduate transfer, a fifth-year senior, uncorks a quick three early in the shot clock with Tennessee up by four. It misses, long rebound. Arkansas goes down, Macon hits a three, the place goes nuts, and Arkansas actually goes into the lead. Jordan Bone from Tennessee has a chance to win it at the line. He made one of two free throws and tied it, and they go into overtime, where incredibly the two teams combined for 42 points, but the ball's lost. And that's one that haunts you if you're a coach, a player, or a hardcore fan. You can't get those kind back. That would have been a priceless victory for them. And I think there was a hangover on Tuesday. The thing about playing Bruce Pearl's teams, and they're better than people think, and they're still missing their two best players. But what they do, they take 33s a game, and they hope to make 9 or 10. And they also lead the SEC in offensive rebounds. And they're fifth in the country in offensive rebound percentage. The reason is he starts four guards. They take all those threes, and they don't make, you know, but a third of them at best, which, you know, that results in long rebounds. The other night they got 22 offensive boards against Tennessee, and Tennessee just looked, I mean, as usual, they played well in the first half. They were up 14, and Auburn, you know, cut it in a hurry, and I think at that point Tennessee was just deflated, and they sort of devolved into maybe what they were a year ago, where they kind of forget about their offense, and everybody tries to be the hero, you know, do things maybe that they shouldn't. They've got a lot of good shooters, a lot more weapons. It's a lot better team than the first two Rick Barnes teams that actually were fortunate enough to beat Kentucky in Knoxville. But, as you said, they're reeling right now, and this early in the season, it's a humongous game for Tennessee.
Yeah, because they, you know, their non-conference profile looked great. Only losses were to Villanova and Carolina, and they're nationally ranked.
And they had Carolina beaten, too.
Oh, absolutely. Really, I watched most of that game. So they... they, you know, are if they lose and go to 0-3 in the league, all of a sudden, you know, a team that looked like it was on its way to a, you know, safely into the NCAA tournament is going to move into to bubble mode, at least for the short term.
Yeah, they would struggle, you know, and the season or the schedule doesn't get any easier. I mean, they, you know, they're going to have to play in the next week after Kentucky. Let's see, looking it up right here.
Well, they're at Vanderbilt, and then they've got A&M at home.
A&M, and so, you know, it doesn't get any easier. You thought Vanderbilt might have been a pushover for them at one time, and then Vanderbilt up and beats Alabama. I write a SEC notebook for Seth Davis's new website, The Fieldhouse, and I wrote this week that already the SEC is kind of cannibalizing one another.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the experts, and I still believe this will happen, we're calling for 7, maybe even 8 NCAA bids. You know, teams are beating up on each other. Arkansas was rolling, and they go into Mississippi State, a team that no one had any clue how good they were because of how poor they of a non-conference schedule they played. They were 12-1, but their non-conference schedule strength was 303. But they go in and take out Arkansas. And then, like I said, Vanderbilt, which had struggled in the pre-conference, takes out Alabama. And then Auburn goes in and beats Tennessee. So, you know, the teams are beating up on one another, and that could ultimately cost the league a bid or two.
The good thing that, from the league standpoint, I think, at least, is in the past, there would always be those games where SEC teams were slow out of the box and, you know, Alabama would lose to a Mercer or something like that. And you didn't see hardly any of those this year, and you saw much better non-conference performance by the league to where they have some respect, and they've got some good numbers in terms of RPI and KenPom and those things to withstand a little bit of, you know, a few beats in the league a little easier, I would hope.
No question, Tom. I think that was the result of a continuing emphasis on the league office. You know, they finally, a couple of years ago, decided they needed a full-time associate commissioner in charge of basketball. You know, for a league as progressive as the SEC, you wonder why it took so long to figure that out. And then, for whatever reason, the guy who was doing it, who had been there forever, they deemed that he wasn't enough of a basketball guy, so they went out and got one of those. And they've also, you know, toughened up the requirements to schedule. And the SEC was number one in the country in non-conference schedule strength. So you're right. That'll help. There were a lot better results. There were some really near misses that could have really boosted the profile. Florida had Duke beaten. As I said, Tennessee had Carolina on the ropes and really should have won that game, and there were others that they let get away. But by and large, it was definitely a good non-conference showing.
22 after the top of the hour, and we're talking with Chris Dortch from the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook, and we'll get to a quick break, come back, and continue for another segment after this time out. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wiley. .5 after the top of the hour, Chris Dortch with us from the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. And you can find that. Got my copy before the season started to read up on all of those UK opponents in the early season. But it is still a useful tool now moving into conference play. And where can folks find it?
BlueRibbonYearbook.com. Still selling them. We sold, this is funny, this is a neat stat that I like to use. We sold over 3 tons of books this year, literally.
I like that.
When you weigh them in tonnage, it actually shows the book is 2 pounds. But, yeah, BlueRibbonYearbook.com, still selling them. And like I said, they are a useful tool, even this late into the season with conference play having started.
Kentucky and Tennessee we're talking about tomorrow. We've been talking about mostly about from the Tennessee side. Tell me what your take is on what you're seeing out of Kentucky these days.
Well, again, referencing that notes column that I'm writing for the Fieldhouse, it's actually, you go to theathletic.com, it's a paid site, but it's really really a good value. And
yeah, it's not a lot. It is a good value. I subscribe.
Yeah, and it's no ads or pop ups or videos or any of that kind of crap. It's just great writing. Seth recruited a bunch of people from all over the place, but I wrote in there that what a lot of people are saying right now, and that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is playing the best basketball on this team. It's funny. This got played right down the road from where I live, and Hamilton Heights. And I wish I'd have known. I don't have time to keep up with high school ball like I used to in years past, but I wish I would have known, because I would have gone to see him a bunch of times. I like this kid, and what's not to like? You know, he's 6'6", 7 foot or whatever wingspan, exerts energy on defense, can make threes, can play downhill, and above all else, he likes to defend. You look at what he did offensively at LSU, but I like to look at what he did defensively. Those last two cracks that LSU had at a game-tying three, he was right there in their face, and I dare say caused both of them to miss. So he's a guy that's always around the ball, a guy that makes teammates better, and to me those are marks of a great player. Kevin Knox is obviously a great player too. I think that, 9 or 10 games in, people began to realize, okay, this is a guy we got a game plan for and stop. He's our first objective to stop. And I think as a young player, he's figuring out how to work around that, and he will. You know, he's had some double single-digit scoring games, and I think he'll figure that out. Again, this is what we talk about this on your show every year. It takes about this time of year, or maybe even a couple of weeks from now, where Cal has had this team experienced with a good non-conference schedule where they play at least two or three top 15 teams. And then there's some teams that they could probably beat. And then they get into conference play, and they might take one on the chin early on, and then that's a teaching tool. And then the rest of the year, and it almost always happens in February and March, they get woke, as the kids say, and they figure out how to do what they have to do. The only problem with recruiting this much talent is that every one of these guys were stars where they were previously, and it takes a while to kind of subordinate one's skills and play with that teamwork that Cal wants and that defensive intensity. Because let's be honest, kids have to be compelled to really guard, because it's not fun, but it's vital. And I think Kentucky is beginning to show signs of doing what Cal wants them to do.
Chris, I appreciate the time as always, and look forward to seeing you down in Knoxville tomorrow night.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
It's Chris Dortch from the Blue Ribbon College Basketball Yearbook. We're halfway home on this edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. Our guests each day, the guest lineup presented by Sleep Outfitters. We're going to get right back to more college basketball talk with Mike DeCourcy in just a moment.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
26 away from the top of the hour as we roll into the second half of the show. Mike DeCourcy is going to join us here in just a second. First up, I want you to hear from Tony Barbie. He was subbing for Cal one of the recent press sessions, and he was talking about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and who he reminds him of.
He reminds me of, when you look back at some old-time players, he reminds me of Rod Strickland. Kind of an awkward basketball build. Shai's got the perfect basketball body. He's long. He's got a long, short torso, long legs, long arms. And he's really crafty with the ball. And he doesn't depend on athleticism to score at the rim. He can finish at a lot of different angles. That was Rod Strickland. That rim, and there'd be 3 7-footers swatting at the ball. And the next thing you know, the ball's going in the basket. You're like, how did he get it in there? It's the same thing with Shai. You watch Shai. He's kind of the ideal guy when you look at him with his game, driving that ball in the paint able to finish right hand, left handed, just as effectively. So he's a difficult guard if you let him get downhill and get in that rim.
That was Tony Barbee. Some good analysis there. We'll bring in Mike DeCourcy from SportingNews.com now. And Mike, he compared him to Rod Strickland. Rex Chapman was on earlier this week, and he threw out a couple of names, Vern Fleming and Sleepy Floyd. Had a fan the other night ask on the coach's show, Elfrid Payton, you know, current player in the NBA. I think Shea's, it's fun sometimes just to throw out that who does he remind you of kind of question. And Shea's the one that seemed to get the most interesting variety of answers. Anybody for you?
You know, I'll be honest, I hadn't given a lot of thought. You know, I think that what's one of the things that's interesting about the players that they're comparing him to is that Shea's bigger than those guys. I mean, Rod Strickland, he's got 3 inches on Rod Strickland.
Yeah.
I think the difference with Rod is that, you know, Rod also had, you know, years and years and years before he got to DePaul of being considered extraordinary. I think the difference with Shea is it's just sort of all starting to blossom now. Maybe it's because, you know, he comes from Canada and the focus, the spotlight doesn't get on a young basketball player as often there as it might a young hockey player. I mean, I know that's a cliche, but it is true. And so, you know, maybe if Shea grows up in New York or Chicago, we would have viewed him differently. But I think that he's blossoming now because he's in that kind of spotlight and showing that kind of ability. He's obviously outplayed whatever his high school ranking was. He's been a terrific freshman, and I think the combination of he and Quade Green has really given Kentucky something that very few teams have, that ability to go back and forth between the two, the ability to play them together. The fact that they both played the position differently than one another, I think it's been a great combination, and it's really something that when we were looking for what would be a strength of this team, aside from the fact that they were really long, that's become a real strength for them because they can grind out wins. They did it against Georgia. You know, they can blow out wins like they did against Louisville playing together. I think it really has become a genuine strength for this team.
Cal said after the game the other night at LSU that he really likes Quade playing off the ball with Shea on the point.
Yeah, exactly, because Shea breaks down defenses so well, and Quade is a terrific spot-up shooter. For a point guard, that's a pretty rare skill for a point guard, to be able to shoot from the wing, because you don't get that spot very often as a point guard. You're usually at the top of the key waiting to restart. And so he's been very good from that spot, especially the right, and he seems very comfortable with that. And Shea's very good attacking the left side, so they play off each other really well. And it's, as I said, this team has great ability, 1 through 8. They have very good players, but they don't have that guy that you could just say, okay, every time this guy is a threat. And so what can they be special at? Well, we've always thought that eventually they could become a terrific defensive team. But now the combination of those two and the ability, like I said, to always have on the floor somebody you're really comfortable with at point guard.
I don't know if you watch Kentucky's bowl game or not, but the Northwestern running back, we were remarking as the game was unfolding how he would just glide around the edge on this one play they were running, and then he would see the seam and he would plant, cut back, and explode uphill. There's a little bit of that I see in Shea's game when he's getting downhill, as Tony Barbee was talking about. And he also talked about scoring, doesn't need athleticism to score, which it's fun to watch guys that can, you know, be high-flying dunkers, but it is also fun to watch a guy control a game less than a foot off the floor, which I always thought Magic Johnson and Larry Bird did very well.
Yeah, you know, I always define athleticism a little differently. I mean, I think that we've now pinholed it to, can you run and jump? And
yeah.
I think that true athleticism is, how do you control your body in space? And how do you apply that to whatever game you're playing? I mean, that's And that's the kind of athleticism that Larry Bird had that people never talked about. And I've had this argument with soccer people on Twitter, like the people who love soccer, not that they don't know it, but people who love soccer who say that Lionel Messi is not a great athlete. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, the guy scored like a million goals. He's the best soccer player in the world. How could he not be a great athlete? But that's how we've sort of skinnied that into, you know, the definition. But, you know, Shea's body control is remarkable. I mean, if he didn't have that, he'd be a tall guy who that people would say, oh, you know, if he could only do this. But because he has such exquisite body control and really understands not only what he wants to do but what he needs to do at a given moment, he's become a real revelation in this season. We've seen guys like Trae Young and just absolutely explode on the scene, and players like DeAndre Ayton or Marvin Bagley that everybody expected to be terrific. But you know, Shea is a guy that, of all the freshmen that are on this team, and we know there are a truckload, he's been one who's been above and beyond what anyone might have anticipated he'd be able to contribute this early in his career.
Speaking not just about him, but about Kentucky overall, we saw, you know, if you watched, I know you watched the Champions Classic early and you saw how, you know, guys like Knox and P.J. Washington struggled in double teams, and then you saw how good they were, Knox in particular, passing out of them the other night down at LSU. So clearly Kentucky is making significant strides. Tell me what you think you know about Kentucky at this point and how it compares to what you thought you knew about them coming into the season, if there's any difference.
You know, Tom, one of the things that I've always said is that every coach who wins big has at least, you know, they all are good at a lot of things, and they usually have a weakness in the spectrum of things that a coach can do. There's usually a weakness here or there, and usually fans pick up on the weakness more than they do on the strength. But if I look at, you know, just about every coach has this one area that he's really great at and better than anybody else. In the case of Jim Calhoun, when he was winning, there was nobody that I've come across that was a better scout, that saw talent and understood it better than he did. And with Kay, it's, you know, he gets guys to communicate on the floor and understand communication better than anyone. And with Cal, it's getting guys to play together. That's what he does better than anyone, is getting them to understand that it's a five-man unit and six and seven and eight as well, and how do you fit into that unit and how do you play off each other, and the fact that even if you're not scoring, if your team is winning, you have to be doing something to be a part of that or you're not going to win. And what he's done with this team is gradually get it to understand how to play together. And that's what they're much better at now than they were against Vermont or against Kansas or whomever. They don't beat Georgia without that cohesion. They don't hold off LSU down on the road without that. They pass the basketball really well. There still are areas of team defense that they don't understand fully, but that's, you know, because it's not just one guy that's a freshman that you're trying to bring onto the boat. You know, it's everybody's in the water, kind of, and you're trying to get them all into the boat. So they're going to give up baskets at times that maybe they shouldn't. And there may be one or two players that can do a lot better in that area and some others that need to do a little better. But they understand each other better than they probably have a right to at this point. It's not to say that they're not going to hit some adversity in a game and fracture a little bit. But I think that they've shown, based on the way they've played over the last month or so, that they're going to be times, you know, that when they fracture briefly, it won't be something that gets sustained.
We're talking with Mike DeCourcy, sportingnews.com, at TSN Mike on Twitter. Got to get to a break. One more segment. When we come back, it's the Leach Report. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
This is the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. You can interact with the show via Twitter at Leach Report. Now, here's Tom.
Talk with Mike DeCourcy from sportingnews.com. Quick thought on the Kentucky-Tennessee matchup tomorrow night, Mike.
Well, you know, I think that uh, it, it's sort of a similar circumstance for Kentucky in that they're on the road against a team that's struggling a little bit, and it starts with them. It starts with them playing the game they want to play, and I think they're going to face probably a pretty difficult crowd, probably the most difficult crowd they face this year. Tennessee is sold out already. I'm sure there are going to be some Kentucky fans in that, but Tennessee being ranked and having a shot to win against Kentucky, I think has to probably feel pretty good about it. But the Vols really, really surprised me with their response to the game. The loss to Arkansas was very understandable. You go on the road, you give up a lead. That's not surprising. But the fact that they had as much trouble in the game against Auburn as they did, maybe it was kind of a trap game for them. That they were looking ahead to Kentucky, but they did nothing well. For a team playing at home, they shot the basketball poorly. They took bad shots. They defended, below the line, maybe not horrifically. And they were wrecked on the boards by a team that's missing its best big guy. So a very disappointing effort for Tennessee at home. And I think that Kentucky has to go in there and feel really aggressive about it, because if they sit around and let Tennessee get some confidence back, then I think they're going to have some trouble.
Rick Bozich wrote a column at WDRB.com yesterday about the coaching job at U of L, and talked to a lot of former star players, the McRae brothers, Billy Thompson, Purvis Ellison, etc., and all of them endorsing Kenny Payne as a candidate for the next coach at U of L if they make a change. I think everybody assumes that's going to happen, but we certainly don't know that yet. But how do you think that plays out?
I think they're going to go, they're going to swing big because they have a lot of money to spend, because they believe that their job is elite. I think it's very difficult for David to get that job, and I think he understood that going in. For him, do the best job you can, see where it leads you, and if they decide at that point that they're better off staying with you, great. If not, I don't think anybody expects that's the direction it would go. I think that the natural thing for them is to go after an established head coach with a significant track record. And that's sort of the MO for just about everybody that's hired among the top 10 or 15 jobs. And it's just a question of who can you get. And I think there's a lot of varying discussion about that. How much money does Louisville have to spend? They certainly have gotten done paying their athletic director and their basketball coach a lot of money combined over the last several years. So maybe there's some money there. Then there's the question of what coach would want to walk into, what's obviously a very challenging circumstance in which, I still don't know if officially that the NCAA has brought a case relative to the circumstances surrounding what happened with the Justice Department, but presuming they bring a case, then there were a finding of major violations, the death penalty could literally be on the table. I don't think that's where it'll go, but I think any coach having to consider taking that job would need to be aware that's at least out there and as a possibility. So I think it's going to be one of the more fascinating coaching searches of the past two decades because of all the dynamics in place.
One of the best games nationally tomorrow, maybe the best, Oklahoma and West Virginia in Morgantown. And Trae Young's just having an incredible year. And we've seen other programs where they'd bring in one guy who was going to leave after a year. And, Ben Simmons at LSU is probably the best example on the negative end of the spectrum. But, they have turned this over to Trae Young, and he is tearing it up.
I think the difference is a couple of things. First of all, Lon Kruger is an established coach who does a tremendous job, and he made sure that they went through the course of last year and they were not winning games, but they were he would not let that team back down. I mean, they were really competing, even though they weren't quite good enough. I think he understood that they were going to be good enough a year later if they could keep it together and not get discouraged and not quit. And that team never did. I mean, they were a threat to good teams long after most teams that were scraping along the bottom of a major league would have just thrown it in. they were still a threat. And so that was a big part of it. And I think the other part of it is that Trae Young is an extraordinarily special player. I mean, he hurts you in so many different ways. And he's a great passer. He's a great creator. He plays with great freedom and makes it really hard for you to deal with him and therefore hard to deal with the other guys. He's always connected to his teammates. It's going to be different tomorrow because West Virginia, I mean, I saw them play Monday or something like that against Kansas State. They were on the road, and they were playing really physically, and they were beating up K-State's guards. A couple of really good guards that K-State has, Kamal Stokes and Brian Brown, Barry Brown. And those guys, they were getting beat up at home. So Trae Young is going to have to deal with some real physicality tomorrow, I would suspect. And I'll be interested to see how that plays out.
Yeah, that's I'm really eager to see that one as well tomorrow. And then, of course, Kentucky goes up to Morgantown at the end of the month for should be a fun game, at least for those of us who like to watch it. I don't know how much fun it'll be to coach and play in, or at least certainly the coaching part. Mike, I always appreciate it. We'll talk to you next Friday.
Thanks, Tom. Look forward to it.
That's Mike DeCourcy from SportingNews.com, and he joins us on Fridays here on the Leach Report, presented by B-Dry. And we are heading to a break. We'll come back and wrap up this edition of the Leach Report in just a moment here on the Leach Report Radio Network, served up by Wild Eggs. I'm not sure. Donato Slice of Wildcat History. It's birthdays today. Tyler Ulis celebrating a birthday. Also, Isaac Humphreys, who played the game of his life in that Elite Eight loss to North Carolina last March. And then Artus Pinner, SEC Player of the Year 2002. And he is celebrating a birthday today. On the subject of football, no surprise that Lamar Jackson has declared for the NFL draft. Wish him well. He was a lot of fun to watch, except when he was playing against Kentucky, obviously, this last season, most notably, because just a tremendous, tremendous player. So the Lamar Jackson era is over at U of L. I don't think anybody's surprised that he made that decision. Coming up tomorrow, it's Kentucky and Tennessee, and this is going to be a real battle. I've already sold this game out. There have been times when they curtained off part of the upper arena down there, tried to curtail Kentucky fans getting in and buying some of the tickets. But I think because the league is better, we saw a great crowd at LSU the other night, and that hasn't always been the case. And it's sold out at Tennessee. So I think Kentucky's going to face even rowdier crowds than usual, and not as much blue may get in this year in those SEC arenas as we have been used to seeing in the recent past. That's going to do it for this edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington, with locations in Hamburg and the Palomar Center. We'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thanks for listening to the Leach Report. Make sure you check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time, right here on the